And welcome to Radio Book Club on Big Cabbage Radio 89.7. I'm Judy Getty, and I'll be hosting the show today as we discuss Me, My Hair, and I, edited by Elizabeth Benedict. My guests are Noelle Gannat from Noelle's Hair Salon and Lisa Boyles. Welcome.
Hello.
So before we get started, I want to remind our listeners that they can call into the show today. The number is 745-8900. So I'm very excited to have Noelle and Lisa with me as we talk about hair experiences. I'm the person in the trio who has very little hair. And as reading, when we talk about reading this book, I think that, you know, it's sort of like people who don't have a lot of money. What do you don't think about, worry about it because you don't have anything there to worry about. So all my life I've had very little hair, but you are two people with hair. And so I'm expecting that your hair stories and your hair experiences will be different. And especially Noelle dealing with people's hair all day long for how many years?
Oh, a lot.
A lot of years. Okay. We didn't want to, I wasn't trying to get you to say your age or anything, but, I thought it was interesting just because you do, you know, you look at other women's hair and you hear women talk about their hair. And so a whole book that, you know, women are writing essays about their hair. But I guess for me, part of it was, how could there be a whole book about that? So I don't know if when you approached this book, what were your initial thoughts, just a book about women and their hair?
Well, when I thought about the book, I just thought it was fascinating and wonderful. I talk about hair all day long, every day, and women can talk about hair, and I could see a whole book about it easily.
Okay, so you have no problem. We're going to talk about hair for an hour.
Me neither. I'm from back east. And hair is very important. In fact, my cousin and I would joke, pay the electric bill or get some good product. You know,
it's an easy answer.
and we'll talk about all the different kinds of choices women make and just how much money is actually spent on hair and hair products, right? Okay. So one of the first things, and there was 27 essays, but I think there's some themes that are common throughout the different stories that the women tell. And of course, one that I could relate to was the long or short. And so I was one of those kids in the 50s and 60s whose mother cut their hair super short because she didn't want to have to deal with it. And then, of course, as a child, then all I could do was wait till I could be old enough to decide to grow it out. And then it was the hippie days, so I got to grow it out and have my center part. So I could, you know, I could relate to that. But, you know, what do you guys hear or what were your own personal experiences about long or short?
Well, I grew up, we all had long hair. My mother had long hair. All the sisters had long hair. So.
Your mother must have had talent or patience. My mother had neither.
We all wore braids. Okay. And we were braided very, very tightly. And so, and we never went to the hair salon. We cut our own hair.
You cut your own hair or your mother cut your hair?
Either a mother or a sister cut.
Okay. But those were trims then because you all kept it long.
But everybody kept it long. Absolutely. Everybody had it long.
Okay.
No, so my experience was completely different. My mother was a hairdresser.
Oh.
So we grew up. And so we were her guinea pigs. And we were the ones who had the page boy when it first came out, the Dorothy mm-hmm. Hamill. So we had all different varieties of hair. But on that note, it was a very, reading this book, hair was important. So, and that's, I think, why I grew up to be anti-hair, because I've always just had, like, whatever, and it used to aggravate my sister and mother because I didn't take the hour in the morning to, you know.
Interesting.
And hair was very important. It was almost like the first thing you saw, and you're too old for long hair, and you shouldn't have gray hair, and, you know.
Always
hair. Hair was a big defining feature of a woman. and messy hair meant mental instability. I mean, it was just
unkempt and not good.
Not clean. Not and good. Oh, yeah. Yep.
Huh. But I'm thinking, you know, what you said there, I think that, you know, from my experience, you know, that I was forced to have it short, so I wanted it long. I think that was common. So you, too, were rebellious. It was like you're supposed to invest this time and effort into your hair, and you're saying, I'm just not going to do it.
Nope, exactly.
Okay.
Well, and mine was opposite. We, you know, we were clean and we were braided, but really hair was nothing and not. You know, we didn't style it. We didn't do anything with it. We never went to the hair salon. And I became a hairdresser. Like crazy.
We're like two ends of the spectrum.
Completely opposite.
I still to this day cannot buy my product at a grocery store.
Yeah.
That's one family rule that you are abiding by? Okay. So, and of course, this is another thing you think about with hair in women certainly is when women become sick, and there's a couple stories in here of either illness or certainly cancer and needing to either shave their heads or losing their hair through treatments, what that does for women. So I'm sure you've dealt with women.
Hair loss for women is huge, and it can be very devastating. And, you know, there's one thing in here that says that you shouldn't cut your hair when you're sick. But when people get cancer, they often feel the opposite. I mean, that was a wives' tale, I believe. Mm-hmm. But they want to take charge of, you know, when they're undergoing chemo and they start losing hair, they just want to shave their head and, like, not let the chemo take it. They want to take charge themselves. And that happens quite often with people, women as well as men. It seems to be, well, I wouldn't say it's harder for women, but it's difficult. It's difficult to
Well, and even, I mean, there's certainly for that where you take charge, but what about, I mean, you can have medications or
hormones,
or different illnesses. Some women after pregnancies,
just thinning,
hair falls
thinning
out.
Hair can be very devastating.
Yes. So, you know, all of that, again, because of that connection for women, that hair equals value or equals beauty.
And you do see a lot of fundraisers, too. I unfortunately had a couple friends with cancer. And it was very limiting. I don't know how it is now with insurance to pay for a decent wig. And so many fundraisers have been out there to raise money for women to get a decent wig because it's a part of their identity, as we found in this book. It made me think it really is important.
I do wigs at my, you know, when I at work, and people with just thinning hair, you know, not cancer, just people, women who have had thinning hair, and you know, they're very, very unhappy. And they get a wig and they want, you know, they want hair.
And I can appreciate that. I'm going to be a woman who, as I get older, my scalp will be more and more visible. And so, you know, I notice that's
difficult.
Something you notice about other women. Then you think, oh, that's what mine's going to look like. And so, but, you know, again, you have to kind of challenge that, I guess. You know, it, for me, that's part of, you know, why have we equated our value with our hair or our beauty with our hair? And so, like you said, you know, when women decide to have the power or they take the control of their, you know, ill, and so they're going to go ahead and shave their heads. And there was a wonderful documentary at our film festival, remember, about the woman who tattooed her head.
And the henna.
Or henna.
Oh, a real tattoo?
Well, I think
there's hair tattoos.
Okay.
This was a real tattoo you're talking about.
I think so. There's women who are tattoo or a henna, and, you know, and they say, you know, I don't have any hair, but my head is still beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, the trend now is to buzz the head, not completely shave it, but buzz the head, and then carve a hair tattoo into the hair.
So what does that mean, carve a hair tattoo?
You carve a, with clippers, you carve a design into the buzzed hair.
Okay.
And women do that.
When they're looking at losing all their hair? Or?
All kinds of different reasons. Okay. You know, who knows why?
Well, that was one thing one of my daughters did. So she came back from a swim trip, and she had long hair, and she lifted it up, and underneath her ponytail, she swam for Palmer High School, and she had PHS carved into it. And this would have been like 1993.
So a lot of reasons to
So some things, I guess, never go out of style.
I remember when it was probably the late 80s, when punk rock was really kind of going strong. And I remember I had this huge mohawk. And I walked into my mom's salon and she made me leave. She wouldn't identify me as her daughter with that hairstyle.
Oh, what did you think? What did you?
I laughed because I
laughed.
Was anti-hair.
Okay.
Yeah, it didn't bother you.
Resistance, you know, of hair.
Because there's the whole mother-daughter hair thing.
Well, we can go there. So Deborah Tannen, who's one of an author that I read a lot of because she's a psycholinguist. And so she talks about how we communicate with each other. And she looks at gender differences in communication. But she did do a whole book called Mothers and Daughters in Conversation. You're wearing that. And so I had read it, and I think I had got a couple of my daughters to read it. But the idea is that when mothers, and this isn't all mothers, but when mothers open their mouths, daughters hear judgment and criticism. And it doesn't matter if you're intending criticism or not. That's what they'll hear.
Yes.
So I did send out a message to my four daughters and asked, what messages did I give you about hair?
What was their answer?
Well, I must have done a good job because they were like, they're like, oh, I don't know. They recalled being young and being forced to sit still. So I would trim their bangs. So that's still one of the ongoing jokes is, you know, their years of life going around with crooked bangs. And of course I say, well, you didn't sit still.
Because they didn't sit still.
I have zero skills, as you know, you can imagine. But, you know, I made an effort and they always had crooked bangs, or I would try to get them straight. So they kept getting shorter and shorter and shorter. So they have, you know, laughing memories about that. But I was talking to my youngest daughter today, and here's the other thing. You know, I confessed I have very little hair. Thank goodness all four of my daughters got genetics from their father because they all have wonderful hair. And so the youngest has a head full of beautiful hair. And the only criticism I can remember is when she would just comb the top layer. So it would look combed, but underneath would be this massive rat's nest. And so she would be forced to sit still while we would try to disentangle her. But they said that I never, criticized, you need to cut it, you need to do this, or, yeah. So I guess I wasn't judgmental.
Good.
Yeah. What'd your two daughters?
I did ask my two daughters, mm-hmm. and I have a quote from my oldest daughter.
Here we go.
Well, I know.
From a professional, they are open
well,
to
I
it.
Was quite pleased, I have to say, when both my daughters gave me the answer. My older daughter said, I think you were pretty reserved with your opinions. I think the biggest message that you portrayed was that style is a very individual process.
Beautiful.
I know.
Yes.
Nice. I was quite happy. And then my younger daughter is very pragmatic. So she goes, usually it's just us saying our hair looks good or it looks bad or I need a haircut. So there you go.
There you go. Short and sweet. Yep. To the point. Yeah.
I need a haircut.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But my youngest daughter has curly, curly, curly hair. And I kept it longish. But it's super thick and super curly. And she couldn't even begin to comb it. So I had to take care of it. And then when she could voice an opinion, she asked for it to be cut. She showed me a picture of a gray-haired old woman with hair about a half an inch long.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what she wanted, and that is what she got. I mean, not gray, but still. Yeah, I didn't color it. I just cut it. But,
yeah.
And I said, everyone's going to think you're a boy. And she goes, I don't care. Hmm. And everyone thought she was a boy. For about 6 years, she went around as a boy.
Okay.
And she was perfectly happy.
Yeah, and there is one story in here about that, too, where mm-hmm. one woman wanted yes. hers very short and
yep.
was mistaken.
And she did. She wanted it very short. And I did cut it short for her. It was hard for me, but I did it.
Yeah. Well, especially when they have such pretty hair, I guess yeah. that's. But, you know, again, one lesson I learned from the book and we all know from life, it grows back.
Yes.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah, my daughter, was a lot like your daughters. Because I was so anti-hair, it wasn't a big deal. And she just said, yeah, Mom, it was never a big deal. And I had little or no control. My biggest thing was she took care of it and it was kept looking, you know, brushing. And when she was little, she has very thin hair. So it would look really pretty when I first brushed it. And then it would just become flyaway. So we used to have this running thing in the morning, literally running me behind her with a brush trying to comb her. So I finally did a pixie cut and she loved it up until her dad said, you look like a boy. And that changed her opinion for years. I'll never forget that because she looked over at me, but she was so pleased because she didn't like being chased around either. It hurt her for me to, you know, try to comb her hair, and it made for a very yucky morning, our start of our day. So, yeah, but most of the time I did not care. You know, I let her be individual when she colored and, you know, I supported her, but I wanted it to look nice, brushed, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's about it.
Well, the one thing, and I don't know why none of them said this, because I can distinctly remember the phase when they would go for bangs themselves, you know, but they wouldn't be like short bangs. They were those bangs that kind of hung over one eye. And so there was the constantly either brushing it out of their face or, you know, or not clipping or whatever. And that drove me nuts because I'm sure I said, brush your hair out of your face. Or I would say, you know, pin it. So I feel like I probably was critical about that hairstyle, but they didn't bring that up. So
no lasting impression.
No, or they maybe just repressed it. So for those of you who are just joining us, we're talking about the book, Me, My Hair, and I. This is Radio Book Club, and I'm talking with Lisa and Noelle, and we've got lots of women's hair stories. If you want to call in and share one, the number is 745-8900. So certainly a lot of stories in here, too, about women of different cultures. And so, again, you know, when you observe women or you talk to women about their hair, you know, some very unique sort of cultural associations, too.
Yes. Living in back east, we would go to New York, and there was a very old Jewish neighborhood, and the women would wear wigs. I mean, you were very evident because they did spend a lot of money on these wigs, and they were used every day, so they had some wear. And I did not realize that most of them were shaved underneath. Yes. I did not know that. I learned that from this book. It was really surprising. Yep.
The Jewish women are told that their hair is too beautiful and too attractive, and they may attract attention. And so they shave off their beautiful hair and literally wear an ugly wig.
Oh, yeah. And they were ugly, unfortunately. Yeah. Like I said, almost looked like costume stuff matted. And yeah.
Absolutely. Yes. Yep. And that is, they still do that.
Wow.
To this day, certainly in Israel. And I don't know about New York.
Oh, yeah. The more...
The Hasidic.
Hasidic and, traditional. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
I love the story about that one woman who was Jewish, and she came on a boat to New York and threw her wig in the... As soon as she saw the Statue of Liberty, she threw her wig in the...
And she'd already been growing her hair out a little bit,
she had already been growing her hair out.
And her husband would brush it at night. Yes. He loved it, too. Yep. Yep. Which was different from the Indian culture, where they would shave it so it would grow in beautiful afterwards. Like the second growth, remember? And then the mom would rub oil, and the hair was just, it was out there. That was your biggest feature, was your long, thick
hair. And they had the
black, straight hair, yes.
Yep.
So, you know, again, I mean, the same cultural value that women's hair is beautiful and an extension of her value and her beauty. But then the way, as cultures, just so, I mean, it just goes to show you that this is nothing that's, you know, required. These are all just, you know, manifestations of our own social settings, that either you have to shave it off because otherwise you'll just bring, you know, bad things upon you because of your beautiful hair, wear ugly wig, or, you know, again, in cultures where they wear the head coverings because you don't want your hair to show, because that is an enticement to men.
It's interesting, isn't it? It's such a... And yet they're not so far away from each other if you look on a map. You know what I mean? How different the... Yeah, and even, like I said, the Indian, too, because they tend to be a little bit more conservative. But that hair was so important. Yep.
And, you know, it goes to conformity, too. Mm-hmm. The whole sense that the one Indian woman whose hair was a little bit different...
She did not fit in.
She didn't fit in. Yes.
And speaking of conformity, in Japan, conformity is... they're all about that. And they have long black hair. And actually, when they all dye it red, the whole country dyes it red. But we straighten hair. We have chemically straighteners for hair. And it was really invented in Japan, the chemical straightener that we use now. And it's because if a Japanese woman had wavy hair, it was considered very bad. And she wanted perfectly straight hair. And so they... developed this straightener that we use, a thermal straightener.
And again, I mean, who decided straight was better than curly? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, and in the black culture, that's huge too. And, you know, I'm not as familiar with, you know, what their experiences are, but
their straightener is different. It's a different chemicals. And I did work in a salon that did just predominantly black people, and that straightener, some harsh stuff.
Well, that's what one of the
stories, her scalp burning and sores and that was also surprising, because that this was just a big issue of one of the was it a basketball player, where some pundit made a comment about her nappy hair.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really upsetting because, like, this was talking about modern day African American women, and still, if they have straight hair, that's still what they want to attain, is that straight hair. And it's so sad because, you know, they're being unable to embrace the natural look and have it be so derogatory. You know, even these strong women in their family, remember that one story, and she said, but they still, straight hair is where you go. You know, you could be a scientist and have pride, but straight hair.
Straight hair.
Yep. Yeah.
Straight equals good and curly is bad. Yeah.
And there's a movement to try to have, you know, go natural. But I don't think it's.
No, it's grandma and great grandma and mom and aunties and yep.
Yep. So certainly I think, you know, for many cultures, the 60s and 70s was that time when, you know, women went more natural. And so I think with African-American women, they did go with the Afro and, you know, Angela Davis set the mark. And, you know, so people were more willing, I think, to look at an alternative. So in, you know, we see these fashions come and go. So in working in the hair business, I mean, is that something that, you know, you'll see lots of customers come in and always asking for the same thing and then that changes?
It does come and go. And I've been in the business long enough that I've seen it come and go. I had an interesting on the Today Show several years ago, there was Brazilian blowouts.
Yes, I remember those.
Yeah, they were in fashion just a few years ago. And Caucasian women would get Brazilian blowouts to make their hair just like silk. And Robin Givens was on Today's Show interviewing a young blonde woman. And the Brazilian blowout was full of formaldehyde and causing, you know, a huge cancer-causing agent. And it was very, very bad for customers and very, very bad for hairdressers. And Robin Givens was recovering from breast cancer at the time. And this young blonde woman was just like, oh, but feel my hair. She's like, feel my hair. I'm going to do it anyway. And Robin Givens was just astounded. And so as I am like, oh, are you seriously saying that you would risk cancer just to have silky straight hair? And yes, that is exactly what she was saying. I was amazed. Wow. We never did the Brazilian blowout in my salon because when I found out I had formaldehyde, I just refused to do it. And there are now blowouts that do not have formaldehyde. So the companies have come around with different.
So that's inside language. I do not know what a Brazilian or any kind of blowout is, other than like when my tire goes. So what is that?
Well, it's a chemical you put on the hair and you leave it for a prescribed amount of time and then you rinse it out and then you blow the hair and then it's straight and silky and smooth and it stays that way for maybe 6 to 9 weeks.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So it's got to be something pretty.
Yeah,
strong,
it's a pretty strong. Yeah. It doesn't stay like the chemical straighteners that they use in Japan or the chemical straighteners they use on black people. It does not stay like straight forever, but it stays for, you know, weeks.
And so that's intended for people like with wavy hair, pretty curly hair.
My hair,
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Wow.
No, thank you.
So, and you know, several of the women in the book talk about going in for blow dries.
Blowouts.
Yeah. Is that what it's called? A blowout? So that's where you just have
it. And that stays for until you shampoo it again.
Mm-hmm.
So the Brazilian blowout stays for like weeks.
Because of that chemical you're putting on there.
Yeah.
Okay. And is it cost a lot of money?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they were very expensive.
What does
it? I never looked into it, but just out of curiosity. Because I do have to say, growing up in a hair salon and washing brushes as a kid.
$300.
Yeah, I'm very much on the outside looking in. Like, I'm just curious because I still have that interest because it was a part of my life. But no, thank you again. You know, I wouldn't want to be a part of it.
Yeah.
And I like to see what happens to you, but I'm not doing it.
I'm just doing a sociological study. I'll watch what happens to you. So my dear friend Lisa has the curly hair. I belong to different groups of women, and it always seems like when you're in a group of women, there's the curly-headed women who all their lives wish they could have had straight hair, and then the straight-haired women who all their lives wish they could have had naturally curly hair. And so again, you know, all this effort to put into curly-haired people trying to straighten their hair. And then, of course, there's some, you know, maybe it's generational. I can remember my mother going to the hairdresser weekly to, you know, have her hair done, put up in rollers and combed out. But so it doesn't sound like you ever worked you know, against your curly hair where you straighten
it. The only thing I did was when I grow it long, it straightens more. And I had it down. When I moved to Alaska, I could almost sit on my hair. So it was a lot straighter then because it was so long and heavy. Yeah, because I have fine hair. So, but no, I just, it was kind of good because I don't care. So I've never blow dried. So I just wash and go, wash and go, wash and go. So yeah, but and that's why it kind of bothered me reading some of these stories because they really were affected by their curly hair.
Actually,
yeah.
I was bothered by that too.
Yeah.
I was because I guess I don't care about my hair that much. And these women really did. And they were really bothered. A lot of them had curly hair and they did not like it. And I
didn't so like sad.
It. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm, did you start looking them up?
Yes, I did.
I was about them,
I wanted
or four
to see
into,
pictures of
yes,
them.
Yes, and so yeah. I had to Google, yes, their images. So thank you. I'm glad we all were like, what?
Exactly. And my hair was never that kind of a tight, unruly, because that can be crazy. You know, I've had friends like that where it's just it's
well, that's
out of
my
control.
Daughter's hair.
Your daughter, yeah. Yep. And so I can see her wanting it short because yeah. It's just, well, you know, instead of worrying about it,
yeah.
Wash and go. I was going to say the other thing that really bothered me was also just like the so much derogatory, like attitude toward that curly hair that these women were getting. I'm thinking, wow. I mean, I always thought of having a curly haired little girl is the epitome of adorable, you know. Uh-huh. Just besides the work involved, you know, chasing with the home.
Well, the one mother that had the blonde curly haired girl,
oh, yes,
she cut it short.
Right, yep.
Yeah, because she was had this beautiful halo of curls, and then she cut it short, and she was very criticized for that.
That's true. Yeah.
Do you think it goes back to what we were talking about? You know, that women are supposed to be well put together, you know, especially when you're out in public. And curly hair is just much more challenging to manage that, right? It's going to spring out or do things that straight hair typically will not. And so.
I think you're right. Yep.
So yeah. When they describe some of the writers talked about, you know, when they were young and I had one daughter with naturally curly hair. And so I could just ringlet it with my finger. And so. You know, and until she went running around like a little crazy girl, like kids will do, and you know, and then mess it all up. But, you know, so I think that, you know, as a child, like you said, I mean, it's more adorable until, of course, they mess it up.
Oh, yeah. And on that note, I know I'm kind of going ahead, but I had to laugh about the woman on the boat near Niagara Falls for the fall.
Oh.
I know she was carrying. My mother was one of those. She used to swim. Where she'd go in the water and she would go like this, but nothing ever got wet from the neck up because
she wouldn't get her
hair
wet.
She was afraid it would turn green with the chlorine and oh, never her hair, not a hair out of place. I mean, that was the wind and we could never own a convertible. I mean, anything like that. And I had to laugh. I thought of my mom, you know, God bless her because yeah, she just was the same way. I mean, humidity, rain, umbrellas. I mean, her hair was protected. And that style was just, you know, yeah.
Well, and the sister who wrapped her head around her hair and covered it with a rain hat to walk to school, she didn't want her hair to go frizzy while she was walking to school in the rain. Yeah.
And see, I guess I think a lot of that is more generational because I kind of like what you're talking about with your mom. Because I can remember mom Fridays would be hair salon day or Saturday mornings. And so she'd get her set in and then she'd have to sleep in a certain bag or something on her hair to help preserve. And she had rollers so she could, you know, in case she had to, you know, tidy it up a little bit or whatever. But, and then out in the rain, she always had a rain hat.
Rain got an umbrella.
A scarf.
Yeah.
So there was always something to protect the helmet of hair. In Aquanet. Okay. That was kind of nostalgic for me. Just reading, I remember those wonderful. They're probably not wonderful. They're probably horrible. They're, you know, because of the fluorocarbons and everything. But, you know, the smell, you know, that elicits a memory of, you know, your mother getting dressed up and getting ready to go out.
To go out, yep.
Yep.
Yep. A little bit of lipstick. Ooh, there she goes.
Yes. And her dress and her, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I sell those little caps to sleep in.
They still have those.
Oh, yeah. People still wear them.
Okay. And that's for what?
To keep your set.
So are there women, is it a generational thing that come in and they still have their, okay.
They're older women and they come in and get a shampoo set and they wear a cap and they wear a rain hat and they put a hood on and they don't comb their hair for a week.
Mm-hmm.
It stays there until we comb it out and reset it.
So that's still a thing.
It is.
Okay. Do you think it's going away?
I do.
Okay. So it's not like you don't see women in their 40s or 50s doing that. This is more. Probably 70s, 80s.
Okay. So my mother, when she was diagnosed with cancer, her biggest concern was
her hair.
No, not her hair. Her customers.
Oh.
She was going to call them up and tell them all she couldn't make it to work. And I'm, it was stage 4 of, pancreatic cancer. And I'm thinking, okay, Mom, we'll call you. But because of that, it became such a thing. This customer for 40 years has come in. And not only that, the social, the part, that other part that goes with going to the hairdresser, that, socialness of seeing that woman. Yeah, every week for 40 years. Yep.
I just lost a customer with pancreatic cancer. And her biggest concern was losing her hair. I mean, she just couldn't bear the thought. And I had a wig for her. I said, I have a wig. And she just cried. And she goes, you do? I said, yes, I have one right here. And I showed it to her. And she just, she didn't lose her hair. She didn't live that long.
But, oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah. But that was her first concern was, what will I do?
Okay, we're going to come back to that. This is Radio Book Club on Big Cabbage Radio, 89.7. We're talking about Me, My Hair, and I, a book edited by Elizabeth Benedict. And I have Noelle and Lisa here with me discussing the book. So certainly, we talk about, some social constructs with regard to hair, but, you brought up some, kind of the sad element of it, how tied women can be to their hair or their looks. But Lisa, you just brought up another thing that I was thinking about too, because the hair salon itself has so much meaning for women and significance. I mean, we have movies and plays where that's the setting because of its significance. So do you see that in your own salon where, I mean, people, this is a social place where it's.
Yes.
Okay. They go in absolutely to visit and.
Yeah. And actually it's, there's a lot of different social aspects, but one big one is the shampoo set ladies that come in every week because they have a set appointment at the same time. And so they see the same people that they don't see anywhere else in their life. They don't socialize with these people. They just see them at the salon every week. And so when, we just lost that one woman passed away from actually pancreatic cancer, the other ladies that come in during that time, they grieve that loss, and they don't socialize together at all. They just meet at the hair salon and socialize there, which is, it's really cool, actually.
Well, it is, and it gives them, I mean, that's what they had in common with that woman, and so that gives them the place and the common theme of what they know about her and can talk about her.
But even people that just come in every, couple of months, it's very social.
I mean, I definitely saw that growing up. Like I said, as a child, we'd go there, pick up my mom and wait for her to finish. And I mean, I still have an angel that one of my mother's customers made when I had my first Christmas tree. I mean, they become part of our family in a sense. My mom's family, my mom's work family.
They probably knew when you were born.
Oh, I'm sure.
They knew when you graduated from elementary school. And they knew when you
graduated. Every grandchild.
Yes. They followed you your whole life.
Oh, yeah. And that was a big day for them. A lot of these women, they go out to lunch and they go to the store. I mean, it was a big day into town kind of a thing. Yeah. Now I want to ask you, Noelle, do you see that loyalty? Because I wonder now, do women tend to go around to different places versus that same hairdresser?
I'm very fortunate. I have very loyal customers. I have the world's best customers. Mm-hmm. And I've had customers for a long, long time. And the salon has had customers, not even just me, but the other hairdressers in the salon. And they become friends and part of your family, and I care about them and they care about me, and I've had very, very long-term customers.
I think women still develop a relationship with the person who does their hair. I remember when I was a probation officer and I was working in the Arizona unit, and we had a barber college in the prison, and so the men said, we'll cut your hair. And I thought, absolutely not. I'm your probation officer. I mean, that someone touching your head is such a personal.
It's very personal.
Yeah. That would have just been so not, something I could have done.
That's one thing. Hairdressers have a license to touch. We touch people.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of, you don't get touched by the grocery store clerk. You don't get touched by the bank teller, but hairdresser will touch you.
Yes, and so it's a different kind of intimate relationship, right? Mm-hmm. And a trust, a different kind of trust in that built-in relationship.
And we do live in a world that touch is really getting less and less. And so people have to pay for touch now, and especially so some of these older people may not have been touched for a long time, you know. That's so it's true. Very important for them to come in and have that human touch. It's kind of life giving in a sense, you know. Yep. Oh, good. I'm glad you still touch.
Kind of requires, it's like I think about my teeth. I wish I could just drop them off and come back later and pick them up.
I know.
So, I mean, there's probably people who feel that way about their hair too, which I guess we could. But another thing I was thinking about, because I don't pay that much attention to hair typically. Now, you said that, you know, obviously you think about it a lot, Noelle.
Well, I talk about it a lot. I don't think about mine, okay, but I talk about it a lot.
But when you see, when you observe, or, you know, you're paying attention to what women are doing with their hair. So I thought, well, you know, I'm reading this book. So I was at a function on Friday night, and this one woman I've known for a long time had always had straight blonde hair, and she's decided to just go with her natural color, which now is graying, and cut it very short, and it's curly. And so, I mean, it was startlingly different, obviously, from this blonde, peroxide blonde, you know, chin cut to a short cap of gray curls. And so I was reflecting about, you know, the women in the book who made these kinds of drastic changes and how other women then will judge them. And so women are always feeling a little bit under the microscope when it comes to any kind of drastic hairstyle change. And so I wanted to be very affirming. Well, I thought she looked wonderful. So, I mean, it was not like I had to make up my enthusiasm for her new look. But I thought, you know, doesn't it behoove us to you know, support?
Yeah.
I can go with that because I recently went gray, but well, not recently, feels recently, but a couple years, I just kind of let it go. It was a hairdresser. My hairdresser friend, I won't say her name because she'll probably get in trouble because I was spending $120 a month. But the gray was coming in really fast. And she took me aside. She said, you know, truthfully, it's just so fast. And do you want to put dye on your head every month? And she was a bit of a naturalist. And I thought, you know, I'm really kind of done with this. I'd rather get a massage every month than spend $100, you know. But I'll come in, you know, I go only get my hair cut there and I buy product and all that. And then when I let it happen, the first thing I noticed was women would just stare at my hair. And I'd be talking to them and they just would be looking. And part of me wants to say, do it, do it, do it. Because I could see in their face, like, can I do that? Because it was such a, almost like a rebel. They were looking and they'd look at me, then they would just stare at my hair the whole time. And, you know, it was interesting. And I often wondered, I wanted to say, I wish I had the guts to say, what are you thinking? You know, how did you do that? How do you feel? Are you given the senior citizens discount all the time? And does it bother you? And yeah, and that was interesting because I noticed it. All I could equate it was kind of like men looking at other, you know, they just kept looking at my hair. Every time we spoke, I'm like, down here, eyes. You know?
But I think that is another huge issue, obviously. I think if I had to guess, most of the essays in here are written by women 40 years older plus. Mm-hmm. It seemed like they were older. And so a lot of them, that was the quandary they were into. Should I let my hair go gray?
That's a very personal decision.
Yeah. Well, and the author herself, she writes the last essay and she says, I'm not going to now. So maybe, she's resisting it.
Maybe later, maybe never.
Yes. And the author before that was talking about how she's sort of like she's a mentor for people who want to go, you know, go natural. I think my the image that I conjured up, because I quit coloring too probably 10 years ago, and was Jamie Lee Curtis, because she has very short hair and it was gray, and it was like, this is who I am. This is how I look.
Emmylou Harris, beautiful, longish gray with white now. She let her hair go gray too. Yeah.
Who's that?
Emmylou Harris.
Emmylou Harris.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yes. Yep.
She's beautiful, curly hair.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It's white.
Yeah, it's white now. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very pretty.
Yeah. But it is very personal because I know I went through that. I mean, how many months I would say, I'm just not going to do it this month. I'm just, you know, enough, you know. And I do have to say, my husband, who really doesn't have much of an opinion on anything like that, he's very easygoing, made a couple of comments about the long brown curly hair, because I had fun with it. I did red and, you know, like wine colored and stuff. And I always had fun when I got it colored. But he made a comment about that. And of course,
the brown curly hair being gone.
Coming back. Yeah. He goes, you know, just what do you think? And so my joke was, because he's bald, when you grow your hair back, I'll color my hair.
So do you hear women struggling with that?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just so personal, and there's so many variables.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Well, you're bringing up one of them, and there was one author in here, and I called it the Sonia Braga hair because she sounded. I mean, Sonia Braga. Oh my gosh, if you had Sonia Braga hair, that's pretty wonderful. So she has wonderful hair, and it was kind of interesting that she is attracted to her husband because he also has wonderful hair. And so they sort of have this mutual hair attraction. And so when she does something different, he doesn't say anything, but until later, you know, that she's looking very corporate or something. I think that she's started to look very conformist and she's lost her Sonia Braga hair. So then I was thinking, you know, for men, and I've talked to other hairdressers about this, that where women will come in to have their hair done and their husbands or boyfriends will come in too, and they'll say not too short. I mean, it can become a real controlling thing. Women's hair seems to be a reflection of the man. So, you know, when you said that about your husband, I'm wondering if he thought, you know, why is your wife so old? You know, that sort of thinking.
Yeah, I'm wondering. Well, and it's funny you should say that because this is my second marriage, you know, kind of being a little open here. But my first husband, I had long, like I said, let it go. And it was pretty curly, not tight curls, but wavy and curly, you know. And I let it go. And he kept encouraging me just to let it go gray. And I, of course, long hair gray to me is, I think, a witch. I just, it doesn't, doesn't. But I laugh because then he ended up marrying a 19-year-old. So I wonder, had I let it go gray, you know, what?
You would have got rid of him sooner.
I wonder what that was about. You know, like be natural, but then, yeah. You know, so it is interesting. I think, like you said, the fear of maybe having an older looking wife, maybe. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't understand it. What do you think, Noelle? You're the hair lady.
Well, I have to say one of my pet peeves, the thing that irritates me very much is men who come in and tell women how to cut their hair. Mm-hmm. And little girls. A mom will come in with a little girl and say, oh, her hair is tangly and I wish I could cut it short, but her dad won't let me. Oh, I just have a real hard time with that.
Yes.
I'm like, does he brush her hair every day?
Mm-hmm.
Then he
and what
have
does she
say.
Want?
Yeah. 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 If he doesn't brush her, you know, and she's little, if he brushes her hair not once, but every day, then he can have a say in that.
Do you say that or that's just what you're thinking?
I have.
Okay.
Good for you.
And, you know, some men do brush. I mean, sometimes it's the dad bringing the little girl in and that's fine. But, you know, what does the little girl want? You know, if she's old enough to say. But, yeah. But there are a lot of women, you know, that say, well, I wish I could cut my hair. I wish I could color my hair or whatever, but my husband won't let me.
That's sad.
It is, and goes back to my story. I mean, just granted it was a physical thing in the morning, me chasing my daughter trying to comb her hair when it was, you know, all tangled up. But it really put a yuck on the day.
It was an unhappy morning.
It was a very unhappy morning. And I hated it. And I thought, what would solve this? Let's just cut it short. And she felt freer, too. We just got up and washed hair and left, and everything was good. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, my daughter was very happy when her hair was gone.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about, you know, men's influence on women's decisions, but do you think that there's other people who influence women about, you know, how to wear their hair?
The media.
Oh, media.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Culture. Yeah.
Culture, media, everything mm-hmm. influences women on what to.
But do you think friends, do you think, you know, your women friends will? I'm trying to think if I've ever done that to a woman, like, oh, you should cut it, or, you know, you should, or, you know, saying those sort of remarks.
I do hear that, but really, I think if you have good friends, no.
Yeah,
they'll
mostly,
just support you.
They mostly need support afterwards.
I think whenever I hear a woman say that, I think you need to ditch that friend.
That is not a friend.
That is not a friend.
But I think several of the writers in the book do talk about that especially
sisters.
Oh, yes.
Oh,
yes.
Sisters, yeah.
Sisters can.
Yes.
I mean, my sisters were great. We all just had long hair and nobody really cared. But sisters can be very.
My mother's beautician torch was passed to my sister. She's not a beautician, but she definitely fell into the whole thing. And, oh, yeah, she takes about an hour and a half to get ready. She's got thicker, curly, blonde hair. And, oh, yeah, it not a hair out of place. I mean, she's religious with everything she does, but that hair is very important. And, like, she will never go gray. She just, her and my mom even told me one time when I was coming back east, going back east from here, I told her I'd let it go. And she said, no, mom doesn't have gray hair. My daughter's not going to have gray hair. So it's, yeah. So my sister, yeah, she's very much a hair Nazi. I hate to use that word, but, you know, just, yeah, she's pretty much, she's in charge of her hair, and it's very important, very important.
Does she nag you about your hair?
Oh, gosh, yes. You know, I mean, it's the longest time she called me Janis Joplin, because it's just, you know, Or Witchy Poo. That was another one. Oh, yeah.
How endearing. Well, the first one is fine. That's how a compliment. Endearing.
That's how I felt. But yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, then there's influence in more a positive way. My niece, which I did ask her that same question, she's her mother, my sister, had very, very long hair when she was raising her children. She's a wonderful mother and just very nurturing, kind person. And so my niece just has this picture of a mom has long hair, period. A mom has long hair. So now that she has kids, she's very purposely grown her out long so that she can look like her mom.
Oh, wow.
And so that's an influence for sure.
Certainly. Because it's not exactly practical, because there's something about being a mom that I can remember, you know, babies grabbing your hair and getting their hands tangled up in your hair.
Growing up in your hair.
Yes. Yeah. One of my favorite memories is a friend who she showed up. We were having, you know, an adult gathering or something. And I'm like, what is in the back of your hair? One of her children had hugged her goodbye and had been eating a Tootsie Roll Pop.
Oh.
And it was tangled up into her hair and she didn't even know it. And I think, you know, it's hard to have long hair and be a mom. It'd be challenging.
Yeah.
So, you know, and thinking about that then, I mean, you know, we like to think that we have agency, that, you know, we're making these decisions about how we want to look, but there's just all these influences. And even though these are accomplished women that are telling their stories, it's amazing how much they would give in to, you know, whether it was culture or media images or these friends or family that would pressure them to do certain things.
Oh, and definitely like the work environment. When I worked for a big business in Connecticut, which brought me to Alaska, and it was almost understood you wouldn't have anything crazy. Curly was a little bit, but more controlled. You know, hair was something you had to kind of keep under wraps, in a sense that they didn't want anything to stick out, and you couldn't do pink or the colors of today. But very short and neat, like corporate, and that was part of the look. You know, you had to kind of adhere to that to work there. You know, yep.
And I think another thing that I picked up as a common theme with these women is that they would. Of course, we're talking about, you know, in the media or cultural figures, they would pick someone like Dorothy Hamill. I can remember when that was a big one. Everybody wanted the Dorothy Hamill haircut. But almost this belief that you don't just get the haircut and you get the look, but you almost become that person.
Oh, yeah. I want to say something. Like, I love your hair, Judy. I love that short hair. And I've always wanted it. But when it's a little curly, it kind of doesn't do the nice, you know, it doesn't lay flat. And but I always, like, I imagine my hair like that. Then it's like, and I'm going to go hiking, and I'm going to be really outdoorsy, you know, and run. I'll start running, you know. Uh-huh. I'm 53 years old. I haven't started running yet, you know.
But if you could cut your hair short, you would.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
I know. A lot of the women in this book did feel like if they changed their hair, it would change themselves.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were disappointed when they found out it didn't.
And then, you know, years would go by and then they would try again.
Try again.
You know, there's a different look and I'll do that.
And these are very accomplished, educated women.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, when you look them up, I was surprised how many like authors there were, or women that were news correspondents and, you know, had public images. So if you're just joining us, we're talking about Me, My Hair, and I, by edited by Elizabeth Benedict. And this is Radio Book Club on Big Cabbage Radio 89.7. I'm Judy Getty, and I'm here with Noelle and Lisa talking about the book. So one of the other things that I kind of made a note about was Born in Prison was the name of one of the essays. And I have an adopted grandson who's African-American, and so he has very different hair from the rest of the family. And so it's been a learning experience. And the author of this essay talks about that, too, that she's adopted. And so her hair is just so different from the family she's been adopted into. And I think that's such a connection, again, that we make about who we are, defining what kind of person we are. And so to look at the people that are your, you know, now family, but that they're very different looking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see that. My niece has a child from her first relationship, and he is a quarter black, and he very, very Caucasian looking, you know, but his hair when it comes in is very much coarse, and she keeps it short, but that was her biggest fear. I don't know what to do, how we've never had to deal with this hair. And she's, you know, thank goodness she found a great group of guys. They had this really fun barbershop, very reminiscent of the TV. It's loud music, and they wear this, all men wear the same color shirts and big guys, all African-American, but it's very hip and fun. You know, I think of like Barbershop, the movie, that kind of gathering, you know, and they've helped her out a lot in that. But that keeping it short kind of keeps him more identifiable with the family. But I know when he was little, it was everywhere. You know, it was, I loved it. I thought it was adorable. But yeah, I could see that would definitely make him different. I mean, her second husband is Irish. So he's got red hair. And yeah, they're very, very much, you know, Anglo-Saxon right now. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
But within families, then that acceptance that, you know, and it can even be biological children ending up with very different kinds of hair too, I'm sure. But, you know, the idea that, you know, we can combat this conformity and we just take it for what it is.
But how does that make the child feel then? I mean, if the family is accepting, you know, is the child accepting too? Or do they hate their hair? Or I suppose it could be different in different situations.
But I think you'd want to get them to accept their hair, that that's part of their heritage or part of their, you know, culture. So, you know, not, I mean, hair is your business, so I don't want to say women should stop spending money on their hair. And at the same time, the book does talk about the, I mean, what is it, billions of dollars.
Oh, it can be crazy.
Yeah. That, and so I've never done this. I've never thought about in terms of like in a year, how much do I spend on my hair? And I think there was one person who even looked at how much time she spent. And then
the
so when she stopped doing that, you know, kind of this gift of time she had then because she was no longer doing that. So time and money.
Well, it can be kind of out of control, actually. It's my business, but yeah.
Well, I'd be your perfect candidate for that because being anti-hair as far as styling goes, but like I said earlier,
product.
We do not. Yeah. And so my husband laughs because I've got the thin conditioner for when it's not winter, summer, but I got the thicker conditioner and each bottle's probably $25-$30. Then I got the thick conditioner that I do once. And then I do have some light product that I put in a little bit. So I'm not completely anti-hair, but I have fallen into that trap, I guess you could say. I did notice though, when I sometimes use the cheaper product, my hair does, it's frizzier. Mm-hmm. It's not as manageable. And I've even broken out from some of the, you know, the stuff. So I guess justifying me spending $30 for shampoo. Well, but I've definitely fallen into that.
And it's tricky. I mean, because, you know, on one hand, we're talking about, you know, all the culture and media messages that women get. And so, you know, are we making conscious choices about what we want to do or how we want to look? But at the same time, you know, the experience of going to the salon, having that attention. I mean, there's parts of it that, sure, you come out looking, you know, better than when you went in, hopefully, right?
That's the plan.
That's the idea. But there's, you know, there's other elements to it. And then there's that, you know, how does it make you feel? And so your own self-esteem. Yeah.
And
so there's.
That's true. Because I've gone to the hairdresser, like, just having a bad day, a bad week. And they'll say, darn, I'm just going to go to the hairdresser. And it probably has absolutely nothing to do with my hair. It's just having that
better attention
and I feel better. And you're around like-minded people, you know, most of the time. And you gab and there's always music and laughter. And yeah, I remember that one story where the woman, when she was coloring her hair, the one that refuses to color her hair, and she goes to that crazy salon where people yelling at each other.
Oh, my gosh.
That was funny.
It made me laugh because I'm thinking, why would you keep going there? Because it's so entertaining. You know?
And she wasn't going to go back.
No,
yeah.
I know. I would laugh it out loud.
Sounded pretty wild, yes.
Yeah.
So I've had, you know, I have many daughters and they are in and out of my house. Plus I've had house guests in and out of that. So they leave stuff. And so I was looking for something in my one bathroom cabinets and I thought, oh my God. I mean, if there's a hair product, I have it, you know? And so there's so much stuff in there that I just have no idea even who it started out. And because even though I'm not a child of the depression, my parents were. And so I don't throw things away. And so it's sort of like, well, I'll just have to get through all of this leftover shampoo and conditioner. And I don't even know what this product is, but I'm going to have to start using it. So if you start seeing me with, I don't know, a different look.
Spiky hair.
Just never know.
It's that product.
I've got some shampoo for curly colored hair. And I'm thinking, I don't know when I'll use that, but you know, they never know if there's a moment of desperation, I'll need some shampoo. So I did have fun with looking up some superstitions, because there was a few writers who talked about either myths or stories, you know, like Rapunzel and that sort of thing. But I just had some fun pulling up some other superstitions that we hold about hair. Was there any on there that you all kind of looked at and thought?
I did. Don't cut the hair of a sick or dying family member. But, you know, I do that all the time. So that kind of made me feel bad. But that's when people want to take charge of their own illness and get rid of their own hair before the illness does it for them. And
I remember hearing this one. If you pull out a gray hair, 10 more will grow back.
I heard that one, too. Yep. I must have pulled a lot out.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and cutting hair. The more often you cut it, the faster it will grow. It's not exactly true. And then
and didn't somebody in this essay say that?
Mm-hmm.
That they thought, yeah.
You can't let the ends get all split or it won't grow.
But doesn't our hair grow from our scalp?
It grows from the scalp. Yeah. But if the ends break off,
that's true.
You won't gain length.
True. That makes
sense. So that's why you need to trim it, not trim it more often or you'll lose ground. But I had a customer who used the Farmer's Almanac. This is very interesting. And she cut her hair, it was on the new moon, and I actually looked it up. So it'd be January 29th and January 30th, or February 2nd or 3rd, or March 2nd or 3rd. And so, the Farmer's Almanac says that. So if you cut your hair on the new moon, it will grow long. And you may laugh, you may scoff, but this woman had hair to her calves.
Wow.
Below her calves. And she would come in and get her hair cut on the new moon. And I was like, okay.
How fun is that, though? It's kind of wicked. I think I might do that. I was just thinking, I'm going to do for a
Look
trim.
It up in the Farmer's Almanac. Yes. It's right there. Mm-hmm. So I found that one interesting.
Yeah. That is interesting. Did you cut your baby's hair and put it in an envelope, keep their first hair cutting?
Of course, I have everyone's first hair.
Yeah.
Is it in a law book?
In a law book?
No, I didn't do in the law book. No.
If you want your child to become a lawyer, you put their hair in
the
law.
I don't want my children. I'm just kidding.
That's what it says.
The one thing I did notice in here, too, I don't know if you did, but like being pregnant, if you had a lot of reflux, you're supposed to have a hairy child. That baby had a full head of hair. Like the more reflux you had, the hair more hair, mm-hmm. which was totally untrue. I only had bald babies and I had a lot of acid reflux.
They got that one.
It didn't work.
No, it didn't work. No.
I remember being told don't sleep with wet hair, not because you would go blind, but because then you would have a cold or pneumonia.
Oh, yeah. You could get sick from or going outside with wet hair.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, get sick with going out with wet hair. I still have a hard time with that. I don't want my customers to go out with wet hair. And I say, I have to dry your hair. No, it's fine. I'm like, but she'll catch triple pneumonia. That's what I was told, and I still believe it.
Well, triple now you pneumonia. Can say, look, it's right here in writing.
I know.
We
right
talked
here.
About it on the radio. It makes it
The one
makes
is
it
that's
so.
True is don't pull your hair back in a ponytail or you'll have a headache. And that's true.
Yeah. It
can be too
headaches.
Tight.
Yeah. That's absolutely true. Yep. So you don't pull it into a ponytail till it's dry.
Well, there you go. I hope our listeners have learned a lot today about hair. I want to thank Noelle and Lisa for joining me as we discussed Me, My Hair, and I, which was edited by Elizabeth Benedict. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Please join me next month when we talk about agriculture in Alaska. It may seem a little early to be talking about planting, but I think this is when all gardeners start to plan and fantasize about their summer plans for their gardens. We're going to be looking at There's a Moose in My Garden by Brenda Adams and Ask Mother Nature, A Conscious Gardener's Guide by Ellen Vandevis. My guests will be Stacy Manier and Michelle Church. I also want to remind listeners that 89.7 is a community radio station that relies on support from listeners like you. So please take the time to visit our website, radiofreepalmer.org, and become a contributing member. Also, please consider us for the Pick, Click, Give program when you file for your PFD. And this is Judy Getty with Radio Book Club. Happy reading.
The Radio Book Club is supported by the Read Alaska Award Program at Fireside Bookstore in downtown Palmer.